Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. Three women, one podcast, and a whole load of badass with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. This week, we're doing something a little different. The format of the show has changed, so we're bringing you the best bits from our radio show this week, including a big debate on whether or not it's ever okay to offer help at the gym. We meet Karen Walker, a woman who survived sexual abuse from her father, took him to court, and then waived her anonymity in order to write a book about it. And we nominate some badass women as our badasses of the week.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
One, two, three, four!
The news stories from Emma Sexton this week. Emma, what has caught your eye?
Well, there's a few things this week, ladies. The first one, Jamila Jamil, I said it right. Mm-hmm. The other
week. Well done.
You got it wrong because I'm really rubbish with names. Unless your name is Bob, nine times out of ten, I won't get it right. So she was at the gym and she did a post on Instagram this week, actually, because she reckoned she was body shamed at her gym. So she went to the gym, she went cycling because she, she likes to, that helps with her anxiety. And a guy approached her who she didn't know and asked her what workout she'd been doing. And she said, that she'd been cycling because I have anxiety and that's why I come to the gym. And then apparently he decided to tell her without being prompted that he'd seen her around, and he always thinks to himself, oh, what a shame, she could look so amazing, there's so many different things I could do to improve her body. And obviously she was outraged.
Was he a personal trainer trolling for clients, or was he
that's what I wondered.
I mean, that either way, it's not acceptable, but...
But I think her whole point is that, gyms are somewhere where we go for our health and well-being, but actually they're just a really uncomfortable place for people, and especially women, because women are constantly being body shamed. And she was just like, if this guy's coming up to me, we're making gyms a really kind of a hostile place and not a place that people want to go to.
I'm going to dispute that. I have never felt conscious in that way at the gym.
Really?
Yeah. I've never been to the gym or been leered at or feel like I need to. I like nice sportswear, so I wear things that I like to wear, but it's not about anyone else, and I don't feel like people are looking and getting competitive. So I don't necessarily agree with that narrative that the gyms are a bad place. I do think he was probably a personal trainer with a really bad sales line, because then his next line would have been, well, if you train with me, you can get this and this.
Yeah.
Because people have noticed an influx of both men and women, but lots of women going to the gym because that gym physique and that gym body is now in. And he was probably trying to make a few bucks. Definitely the wrong approach, because whatever you're doing works for you. But I was talking about it with my friend the other day. A guy in the gym who's a trainer keeps saying, I don't know why you're doing cardio, because you're not going to lose any weight and you want to lose weight. So go and actually do some weights. So he's saying to her, you can lose weight by doing something else. And she doesn't think anything of it.
Yeah, and I'm with you, Nat. There was a bit of me, you know, looking at this because now, knowing what I know now, I see a personal trainer to do strength training. Mm-hmm. And I only started that 2 years ago, and I'd always done running, long runs. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed at how quickly that transformed my body. And if someone had told me that there was a smarter way for me to work out, that one would make my metabolism increase, yeah, two would make me feel really strong, and three, tone me in a way that no other exercise had, then I would have I should have done that 10 years earlier.
But again, it's all in the approach. It's all in that opening line. And I think it was probably a PT with a really bad opening line.
Yeah, you don't want to be shamed.
I'm not even sure it is. Because I agree. I think it was a terrible opening line. And I know lots of... I had a gym previously. The PTs had to really work to get work. And so you'd be there just minding your own business. And you constantly have somebody being like, oh, do you know how to use this running machine? Well, yes, clearly, because I'm running on it. So clearly, yes, I do. But I think there is just a general thing that I would really love society to learn, which is let's not comment on somebody else's body unless they ask you to. Mm. Because you don't know where that person is.
But if you are in an environment where, like, whatever you do in life...
No, absolutely not. Take yourself to the gym, you do not take yourself to the gym to open yourself up to comment on your body.
No, but if I was taking myself to somewhere that was around optimum nutrition and I was eating some chips and someone told me that there was a better way to eat, I would welcome that information, wouldn't I?
I would be horrified by that. I would be absolutely horrified by that.
But if I'm going to a place that is about nutrition, about... You know, we go to a gym to get fit and to exercise and to do exercise well.
But
so do we not want the information?
What is right for somebody else's body? I'm sorry, that makes me really angry. How dare anyone assume they know what is right for somebody else's body?
They might be qualified.
Yeah.
No, but it still does not mean, unless you've done a health check and an assessment with that person, you still do not know what is right for their body.
No, but you could still...
You can make an assumption that chips are bad in this circumstance where you're trying to eat healthily. Chips are bad,
but they actually
and maybe
don't.
A salad
what
is good.
What happens if you are somebody who is a former anorexic who has not been able to eat anything? Mm. And they have chosen, you know what, maybe chips is not the nutritionally correct thing, but they are choosing to eat something.
Again, I think
you do not know. You do not know. So do not comment on other people's bodies.
Emma's point was if you're in a place where it's about eating well and someone makes that comment. She's trying to say, basically, if you're in a gym and you are in a gym to get fit... It's likely.
But how does anyone know that?
Because you're in a gym.
Might be in a gym, as Jamila Jamil says, for her anxiety, because it helps her with her anxiety. You might be in a gym because you like to go there after work. You might be in a gym because you've decided it's... I used to go to a gym because it was a really beautiful building. You know, there's a lot... This world where we think we have the right to tell other people what to do with their bodies is unacceptable.
I just wouldn't process it in the same way. I'm thinking,
but that's you, Nat. That's you. You haven't been through that. You haven't. So Jamila Jamil's really open about her struggles with eating. You know, she has been through that. You have not been through that. So it's different for you, and that's totally fine. Mm. But you don't know what somebody else has gone through.
I see your point, but I still.
If somebody asks you, that's fair enough.
I don't think gyms are generally a place where if someone makes a comment about your body, i.e. a personal trainer, it should be taken in a bad way. It's completely a bad setup. If I went to, and I'm saying me, but equally, if you went to a place where it was all about vegan holistic eating and you... I don't know.
Chowed down on the 13-pound burger from earlier.
Yeah, you know, it is a bit of a contradiction. It's like, fine, you can do that, but it's about the environment and the context. And so, yeah, you don't have to comment on someone else's...
You should
what someone else is doing.
I
personally would not process it.
And that's
all.
What I'm saying is you wouldn't process it, mm-hmm. but that is you. And what we need to have is an awareness that our life circumstances are not other people's life circumstances.
But isn't there also an argument to say sometimes you just need to let stuff go?
I mean, yeah, maybe. I think this one is actually really important. I think this one is important because we know there are so many women out there suffering from eating disorders, from self-esteem issues, from body issues, because of people commenting on them from age upwards.
Do you not build your self-esteem by saying, do you know what? I don't really care what anyone says.
Of course you do, but
and
if
so you
are not there,
you can say what you want.
If you're not there, if you're really somebody that is not in that place, you know, let's allow for a world where people are imperfect.
Well, maybe they should work on it. The next time someone says something that you don't like,
tell them
just
to
ignore
do
it. Exactly. Yeah. Be like, actually, I think your head's too big.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what? You could do some work on
your
nose.
Legs are too skinny.
Yeah, or exactly.
They could just not be put in that position to begin with.
I know.
They could just not be put in that.
You know what? I was just looking at something on the
other
screen.
People's bodies.
Look, in the general context, I agree with you. In the context of the gym,
I'm like, there is a big difference between commenting on somebody and saying that person doesn't look good versus saying to that person you could have a more effective workout
in the nicest possible way, Emma. That is the same statement, just dressed up in prettier clothes.
It is, actually, isn't it?
But it's factually
it's a correct statement. There is a more effective way for you to work out right now.
You're still determining what makes somebody's body good. That person might be totally happy with their body. They might be like, do you know what? My bum could lift up another inch, but actually, I don't care. I'm good with it where it is. I'm willing to work out.
You know, I like mine lifted.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm paying money to go somewhere, I'm looking
lifted.
For an optimal, most effective approach.
But that's
but I
you.
Look at that in everything in my life.
This is you. We're talking about wider world.
No.
We're talking about...
Do you know what? I was just... The pledge
optimal
was just on in the corner of my
optimal
eye.
Optimal for everyone else.
And there was a conversation around, are we just a bit too soft and sensitive? And I'm almost in the place of, in this context, Jamil, last week I was backing you. This week I'm like,
not
babes,
sure.
Come on.
I think that is...
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
I think that's terrifying, actually. I think just ignore them. But if you have somebody who has said this to you all the time, if you've grown up with this message the whole time, it's hard to ignore it.
Well, it's something that
it's
should be
hard.
Worked on, I would
no,
say.
I think
which
the
is
rest
the
of
same
society
thing a coach would say,
work,
which is the same thing a
absolutely.
Therapist would say.
Which is not to say that we don't work on it personally, right? It's not to say that we don't work on it personally, but it might be easier to work on it personally if we weren't faced with it every single
but
day.
But success would be that when someone did say something, it meant nothing. That's
no,
what success
actually,
would be.
I don't it think is. It would be. I think success would be a society where we did not feel the need to try and improve strangers' bodies.
But sometimes it's not about society. Sometimes it's just about you recognising there are some things you cannot change, but the only thing you can change is your response to it.
I disagree. I think this is something which, as a society, we need to work to change. We need to say it's not okay to bring up young girls feeling that if they walk into a gym at any second, they might be accosted by somebody telling them they're not good enough to be there. That is not okay. That's not a society I want to live
in. I'm not saying that is someone saying to a young girl, your body is not good enough.
That's what happened.
No, Jamil is like, how old is she? 30-something?
God knows. Probably, yeah.
It doesn't matter. Somebody saying to any woman of any age... Any woman of any age in any physical shape should be able to walk into a gym and feel it is a safe place where they are not going to be told they are not good enough to be in there.
It depends on
that
how you hear
it. That is why we
it.
Have an obesity crisis.
But that,
there
depends
is no
on,
other way to no, hear that statement. See, he but, said, your no, body is not good enough.
No, but we hear it in a different way to how you're hearing it.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Based on our relationship with the sentence.
I think
to
you're
me, it's
both
like it's
mad.
Performance, it's effectiveness. Yeah. You're hearing it as a put down.
It is
and
a put down.
Because from
your
worldview, from your perspective, and I can appreciate that from your perspective. I'm just saying from my perspective, it's not like that. It's like, oh, there's a better, smarter way to do something.
Yeah.
Tell me more, please.
Yeah. I think it's cruel. I think it's cruel.
Lady, do you know what I think is great? I've picked such a controversial story.
You have.
Thank
you.
Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
She'll get you talking.
The whole Me Too movement has really shown this urge for women to speak up and own their stories and just be really honest with what has happened to them and how they have experienced it. But I think it takes particular bravery to do that when it is your own father that you're talking about. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if you could do it. But our next guest, Karen Walker, has not only taken her father to court for abuse, but she's then waived her right to anonymity and written her story in her new book, Tell Me You're Sorry, Daddy. We're joined by Karen in the studio now. Hi, Karen.
Hello, it's nice to see you all.
Thanks for joining us. It's lovely to have you here. So let's start off right back in your childhood. Can you tell us, I guess, the story of growing up in the late 1970s, what your childhood was like?
I was born in 1971, so quite, I'm getting old now.
You look good for it.
Typical 1970s, lived in a council masonette. It wasn't very it wasn't a nice house, it was basic. But our childhood was one of emotional neglect and physical abuse and mental abuse and from both of my parents. And then as I got a little bit older, sexual abuse at the hands of my father.
And were you an only child? Do you have?
There was five of us. They had five children between them. Four of us lived at home, but my sister, who sadly died, was taken away as a youngster, and she lived in care most of her life. She came back some forwards, but mostly she wasn't there.
Growing up, did you feel like you were living in an unhappy environment, or did it almost become normal?
Well, as a small child, you only know your environment. Mm. You don't have anything to gauge that against. Mm-hmm. So you believe that what's happening to you and how you live your life is normal. We were isolated from other people. We were isolated from family members. And any support we could have got from the outside world was taken away from us. And although social services were involved quite a lot when we were small, they never intervened. They took my sister. Mm. They took us all at one time and gave us back, and then took my sister. But although there's lots and lots of reports, and a lot of them are in the book, they never actually did anything. They just reported on what was happening. Mm. My parents were able to do what they wanted. As I said, there was no one. Family members were kept away from us, and there wasn't really. We were told. I did have grandparents in my life, but I was led to believe as a child that they were bad people, so I would never have confided in them anyway.
By your parents?
Yeah.
Was there a time, can you remember at the time when you realised that what was going on was not okay, that it was abuse? And then what did you set about trying to change things or escaping that?
I think as a child, like I was explaining, I didn't know any different. So I believed I was told by my father when that abuse started that everybody did it, all dads and daughters did it, so it was normal behaviour. And as the time went on, he changed what he said to me. It would be, you know, you'll break the family up. Do you want me to have to go to another lady, and then we'll all be broken up, and your brothers will be heartbroken, and your mum's ill, and if she ever knew we were doing this, he would always make me complicit in using the words we. Mm-hmm. And it only took until this year that I realised it wasn't we at all, it was something done to me as a child. But at the time, yeah, he would change what he said to me as I got older and as I became more aware, until when I was a teenager and I was able to try and say no, this is not going to happen. Then he threatened violence, so I never said anything else then. But as far as our childhood, with everything else that happened around us, I never questioned it, because I never knew that it was could be any different. Mm. Only when I became an adult and a mother myself, I knew that it had to be different.
So it was quite late in your life before you kind of realised that actually this was not, you know, a normal upbringing and not okay.
Well, when I realised this wasn't something that I was responsible for, that was only this year when I could say it with my mouth, but my heart didn't feel it. Mm. I always felt responsible and a bit guilty and a bit ashamed, and I felt like that was something inside me that you could see. But this year I'm starting to understand, no, it isn't. There was no we in this. It was something that he did to me.
How do you feel when you say or repeat the words, it's normal, it's something that all daddies and daughters do? Because I literally, a shudder went down my body as you said that. But you say it almost easy again, just because I'm guessing you heard it so many times.
I think because I was told it at a very young age, like age seven, round about seven or eight, and I did believe it. I now know it's not true, but it was something that became a core belief in me, that it, you know, you don't say anything, you don't have a voice, and this is normal, so don't speak out. What's the point in speaking out? I once did bring it up and it was ignored, so that just reinforced that everyone must do it because no one said anything. But I can say that now. When I first had to talk about these things in 2010, when I first reported it to the police, I almost had to pull these words out of my throat. It was so difficult to say. And the first time you have to say the things is so difficult. But it's so much part of the healing process to talk, because now I can sit here and say it to you. 7 years ago, that wouldn't have been possible.
How did you get the courage then to go to the police? Was it you going to the police that led to your father's conviction?
Yes, I always believed I'd never report it because I didn't believe I was strong enough to go through a court case and to face him and even just to tell. And I was still carrying that shame inside me. But I visited my grandmother at a nursing home in Kirkdale in Liverpool, and I saw him there, and it made me realise that I didn't know who he lived with and who he had access to, because he was living in another part of Yorkshire in Leeds. And I went away and just couldn't function for days because I was thinking, gosh, who are you with? Who are you around? Everyone thinks you're such a nice guy, because he was always salt of the earth, nice guy. But I knew what the truth, and that was why I reported it. It had nothing to do with what he'd done to me originally. I just knew I had to report it then. It took 3 attempts at going to the police station. Well, finally, I did report it, and then there was no going back.
Wow. And then going through that process of prosecuting and in the courts, I mean, we've seen lots of news stories about that court process being really brutal for victims, especially victims of sexual abuse. How was that for you? Did you get treated with care during that process? I'm sure it was really difficult. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I hear so many stories from people, especially now since I've done this, who don't feel not believed, and they say the police didn't take them seriously and the CPS rejected them. But for me, I did feel believed. The police did believe me, and they were very supportive, and the CPS took my case with very little evidence, really. All I had was my own voice, and that proved to be enough. But I feel extremely lucky that that happened, because so many people don't get that far. But I want people to know, you don't understand, when the CPS reject your case, you automatically think they don't believe me. But it's never that. It's that they don't believe there's enough evidence to get a conviction, and it's coming out of the government's purse. It's got to be carefully considered. But when so up until that point, everyone believed me, everyone was supportive. But I wouldn't pretend the court process is easy to anybody. And the cross-examining, that part of it is absolutely brutal, you're right. There was a whole day of standing in the dock and being questioned. And that is really difficult. And I wouldn't take that, I wouldn't pretend it's not. But equally, I would say it's so important that you do. If you can, and you have, and you all have, everyone who's been through this has got the courage. If you can pull that out of yourself and go forward, as difficult as it is, it's over then. And I thought that coming out of court would be like a switch and my life would be instantly better, and that didn't happen. But when I look back now over 7 years, it was definitely the first step in me getting better. I'm a different person now. Slowly.
Was your father in court when you were giving evidence?
Yes. They offered a screen, but it was actually a curtain. And I'm not sure if all courts are the same. This was Liverpool Crown Court, and maybe some have a box or a proper screen, but this was a curtain. And I was aware he was in the room. I knew his cough, and I could hear him mumbling. So that was difficult, but I couldn't see him. So that was something.
And when you were a child, how long did the abuse go on? And then did you leave home, or were you in contact with your father even afterwards? What was your relationship with him like?
It started when I was around 7 or 8, possibly younger, from memories that have come to me since. And it stopped when he left the home, our family home, when I was 16. they got divorced and he left, and that's when it ended. I did see him a few years later on when he got married to a lady in Leeds, and he got back in touch with all with his children, and my brothers were thrilled, like they got their dad back, and I carried on living the same life I'd led as a child. I couldn't destroy their happiness and tell, so I went along with it for about 18 months. To the outside world, it must have looked like a happy family, having a Christmas together and going to his wedding. But the reality for me was very different. I'd only see him when my grandma was there, and I would only sleep there if I could sleep in bed with her. And if she left the house, I left the house. And I'd never leave him with my son. The reality of that, it nearly destroyed me for 18 months, and then I couldn't do it any longer. And then I didn't see him again until I bumped into him in a nursing home.
Did your mother know?
I'm not sure I'm allowed to say something that's not been proven, if you like, especially because I've written a book.
What about your brothers? Did they know what was going? Did your brothers? Did you end up telling them what had happened?
I did as an adult. They know now, and one brother is very supportive. He lives in America, but he is supportive, and he came home to come to court with me. He has issues himself from his childhood, and I think all of this is hopefully making him stronger too.
Mm-hmm. So there are two things that I want to put...
Karen, go on. No.
Oh, I thought he was going to say something else, but in the book there are two things that I want to point to, firstly about your mum and then your siblings. You say, as a little girl, I believed everything mum said to me. When you're small, you do. You do think that your mummy is telling the truth, that every word that comes from her mouth can't be challenged. Now, though, when I look back, I can see that my childhood was littered with lies. That sounds pretty harrowing, because growing up, you think your parents are the world and everything they say is true.
That's it, because you don't have any other worldly experience to go on. And they're your caregivers and your nurturers, and they're the building blocks of your personality. And when that's all negative, that has an absolutely devastating impact on you for your self-esteem.
So how do you know who you are and what is real and what is true? How did you manage to find that in yourself based on who you are now?
I think for many, many years in my adult life, I'm still struggling with it. I have really low self-esteem, and I don't think a lot of myself, and I can't accept when people say you're brave when you're stronger. And I've written a book and people tell me you must be so proud, and I can't reach that far. I'm finally at the point where I'm happy I did it. Because of the feedback I'm getting, it's been phenomenal. So many people have messaged me and said it's helping in one way or another, so I'm glad I did it. But my core beliefs have come from what I was told as a child. And as I said earlier, people in my life who could have been our saviours, if you like, were isolated from us with lies or just kept away.
Again, I'm pointing to some text from the book. You say Jenny was an adult now, so there was less interest in her and more of a movement towards looking at Donna's life. But as always, there were things that they never saw, things they couldn't have seen. I saw Mum beat Jenny to the floor when she was 7 months pregnant. I saw she had cut off all of Jenny's hair, just as she had done to me at one point. Can you tell us about that?
I believe my sister's life was made miserable from the moment she was born, really, up until she died.
Jenny?
She was a target for my mum's hatred. It's clear in the social services files that she was very much not wanted and not liked. And somebody wrote in the files that apparently she was a problem child from conception. So even in the womb, she was difficult. How that is possible, I'm not sure, but... What was the second part of the question?
And Donna, you saw your mum beat Jenny to the floor when she was 7 months pregnant. Yeah. And then Donna, another sister.
Donna's Jennifer's daughter.
Okay.
Because what happened was when Donna was born, my mother took her away from my sister, but my sister got her back. Mm-hmm. It took about 14 months, but she went and got help from social services and whoever she needed to get help, and she took her back.
Can I ask, are you angry with social services? Because I'm angry with social services on your behalf. Do you feel like they should have done more, that they should have intervened earlier, that they should have actually been more reactive?
I think social services have a really difficult job. I understand that. And they're criticised for doing too much and they're criticised for doing too little, because how do you always know and get it right? But when it's clear in front of you in black and white and reports and evidence and marks on a little child's body, then I think that definitely more could have been done. I'm angry for my sister because she was passed around and she was never protected, and she kept getting put back into an environment that was harmful to her. And she was also isolated from her other siblings. We was played off against one another. You know, she's got this wonderful life. And she comes home just for her own gain, and then she'd go back again. And we were told, that's what we were told, and she was told, they don't want you, you have to go. And it was cruel, really. She damaged our relationship a lot. And the last couple of years before my sister died, we actually met up quite a few times, and I think we never have the relationship we could have had as sisters, and I'm always be sad for that. But we did talk and we did mend some bridges, and she told me a lot of things in them couple of years.
But your book's called Tell Me You're Sorry, Daddy. Have you had an apology from him? Has he apologised? Has he admitted to what he's done to you?
No, never. He pleaded not guilty to everything when he was arrested. He pleaded not guilty, and it took about 11 months to get to trial. And on the very first day of trial, he pleaded guilty to a couple of minor charges that would have just led to a very short prison sentence, if one at all. And the court, the judge sent somebody to my house to tell me this is what he proposed, and if I accepted it, I wouldn't have to go through a trial and my brothers wouldn't have to give evidence. But they were urging me not to. Would I find it in me to go ahead, which is what I did. So he pleaded not guilty to all the serious charges, but was found guilty of everything he was charged. There were 24 counts, and he was found guilty of everything.
And how is it not having an apology from somebody who's been so abusive and treated you so badly? Have you been able to kind of get some closure on that, or is that something you're still having to work on?
I don't need an apology. I don't want an apology. And a lot of people asked me after he went to prison, will you go and visit him and ask him why? And it was quite clear to me, I don't want to visit him and ask him why, because I know why. It took me, I never realised until I was waiting to go to trial in 2011, and I'd taken a few days by myself away because the pressure was very, very high. And it was only then, in them few days away, writing things down and keeping a diary and reading another survivor's book, that I realised he was a paedophile. And it was like a light bulb moment to me, because, as I said earlier, I'd always thought this was just something that happened in families and we'd done it. But it wasn't. He was a bad person. He was hurting his own little daughter. So when people ask me, do you want to ask him why? No. Why do I? I know why. He has that. He's a paedophile, and he did that to his child. Don't need to ask him why or get a sorry.
Yeah. Karen, it's an powerful, incredible story. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. Where are you in your life now? You've written the book. What's happening for you now?
I'm a completely different person now. I am going to court, talking. In my opinion, even if you don't go to a police station, if you tell a friend or a family member, it's definitely the first step in your recovery, because you hold it inside otherwise. So for me, the last 7 years, I've grown as a person and got stronger. And now I got over the fear of writing the book, and it's out there. And the response I've had has reinforced that I did the right thing. And I'm starting, the butterflies are going away now, and I'm starting to feel good about what I did. So myself and my partner will move away hopefully soon, and I'm going to concentrate on building up my coaching, life coaching, and yeah.
Fantastic. Karen, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us your story
Karen Walker's book, Tell Me You're Sorry, Daddy, is out now. I recommend reading it. It's a beautiful read. Coming up, it is our Badass of the Week. But this week, we're taking it bigger and better than ever before. There's a whole ceremony. There's a whole leaderboard. We're going to have
it's
a little
gonna
competition.
Get competitive.
We're going to find the baddest Badass of the Week here on Badass Women's Hour XL.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
And welcome to the first ever weekly Badass of the Week Awards.
I love that blend.
Badass of the Week Awards. Yes, we have got the golden envelope all ready to go. We are going to be nominating our true badasses this week and then fighting it out to see who wins. So I'm going to go first. I'm going to nominate a woman called Natalie Reynolds. So Natalie Reynolds is speaking in negotiation, as we were earlier in the show. She is a negotiation coach, which means that she goes into businesses and teaches them how to negotiate well. She's been doing that for quite a few years now. But she has just launched a new product called Make Your Ask. And basically, Make Your Ask is an online negotiation course. It's the same course that she teaches to corporates for thousands and thousands of pounds. You can buy it for £10. And for everyone that is bought, she gives another course to a woman in a part of the world where they can't afford it at all. So she's working with organizations that run mentoring and education programs all across the globe. Each course will be rolled out as part of those organizations. Every time one's bought, another one gets gifted. I think it's incredible. She's basically giving away her IP in order to ensure that women all around the world have the skills they need to argue for themselves.
Nice.
Badass.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Totally badass. I'm so proud of her. The program is called Make Your Ask. Go and check it out now. That's my badass of the week. Emma, who is yours?
So mine is Professor Wangari Maathai. So she was, and she's dead now, an environmental and political activist, and she was the first African woman to win a Nobel Peace Prize. Now, we often have badasses on here who have done lots of stuff for people, but this woman has done stuff for people and the planet. So in 1977, she founded the Greenbelt Movement. So this was about planting trees to prevent environmental and social conditions deteriorating and damaging the lives
lives of impoverished people in Africa. Because what she noticed is there were these very poor communities that were becoming even poorer because a lot of the trees and plantations around them were also being removed. But what happened was, as she went on this journey to kind of save these areas and understood it, she actually uncovered that there was lots of political things going on. So she got beaten, she got whipped, she was in she was basically a massive threat to the government there from what she was trying to do. She's successful. This Green Belt movement still exists, and she's fundamentally helped change those communities and help them remain self-sufficient. And I just thought that she was pretty amazing, and I'd never heard of her before. And I wanted to nominate her. And a nice quote I found from her is that, I have always believed that no matter how dark the cloud, there is always a thin silver lining. That is what we must look for us. We cannot tire or give up. We owe it to the present and future generations of all species to rise up and walk. So she is my badass of the week.
I love that quote. Mm. Very cool.
She feels like a strong contender.
Yeah.
Nat. We're just deleting this nomination now.
No,
you can't have Rihanna as your badass every week.
I can, because
how many weeks of Rihanna have we had now?
Does something on a regular basis that warrants her ranking as my badass of the week. And this week she closed out New York Fashion Week, and she did it in true Rihanna style. She was it was her debut for Savage times Fenty, which is her underwear lingerie line, and it was just a raving success because she brought out women of all different complexions, of all different sizes. She even had a pregnant model on the runway too, and that model went into labor actually a couple of hours after the show. Her collection is about showcasing bodies of all types. It's about diversity. So she does a whole range of skin tones, but also celebrates sexuality. So she has a series of collections. So your regular, your sort of your basic days, right through to Damn That's Hot. And the Damn That's Hot sort of collection is a bit more provocative and close to possibly S&M garb, but it's all fabulous. And so she's my badass of the week because she's doing things. She's realizing that not all women are catered to. Mm-hmm. And she is saying that isn't okay. So I'm going to do something that means women can access things that they haven't been able to access.
Like underwear.
Yeah.
Okay, ladies, it's up for debate.
I feel Rihanna needs to be disqualified.
What?
I feel like Rihanna is not the strongest.
I love her too, but like she's been badass of the week so many times, and she is amazing.
Also, you know, she did a runway show at New York Fashion Week, ultimately is what it came down to. Like, so did lots of other people. There was loads of money behind it.
She closed out New York Fashion Week.
She didn't create it from nothing.
No, I know.
I feel like
also Rihanna.
It's a good thing to do. I'm into it.
No.
I don't think it makes her a badass of the week.
Rihanna. I think we just have a Rihanna category for badass of the week, and she sits in there. Anyway,
Emma,
you and me, Harriet.
What do you think?
Do you know what? Much as I love my badass and she is leaving a legacy, what Natalie is doing, I think, is pretty incredible too. Your badass.
So I'm going to make my final argument for my badass, which
of course,
is...
You're really good at making arguments, so I'm totally done for, aren't I?
No, not at all. Which is, here is a woman who has put aside the business that she has built up for 6 years because she believes that the one thing that will change the lives of women around the world is being able to negotiate properly in terms of not just money, although that's very important because it leads to economic empowerment, but also in terms of having better relationships with their families, being able to argue their case in courts of law, being able to argue their case for health. It's going to change their world. So I think she's a strong contender.
She is, but then mine planted loads of trees.
That's true. She has given us an environment in which to breathe.
Exactly. Mm. When she supported loads of communities. I mean, Natalie, you're probably neutral, seeing as we've kicked Rihanna out.
Which I think is
Who
unfair.
Do you think?
I
might think have we need some rules to this. Vote.
So the bit that you shared just then really got me. Because being able to negotiate all of those different things, access to services in court, that can change the pathway, not just for a woman, but for the family.
We're going to give Nat 20 seconds to think about it. And if you want to talk to us, if you've got a badass of the week we should know about, you want to weigh in on any of the topics we've talked about this week, you can come and find us at Badass Women's Hour HR all week, at Badass Women's Hour HR, Twitter, Instagram, all the socials, or me at Harriet Minter, Nat.
At Nat D. Campbell.
And Emma.
At Emma Sexton.
Emma. Nat, final decision. Who's your badass of the week?
I'm going with Natalie because she's got a good name.
Natalie Thank Reynolds, you are simply the best.
Harriet
she
wins.
Is our badass of the week. We're going to have a leaderboard. So each week we will know who the winner of our badass of the week is and also which of us presents the
I'm
best.
I'm making a note now in case
the best
cheat.
Badass is. I totally would.
Rihanna.
It's official. Natalie Reynolds, Make Your Ask founder. She is our badass of the week. She is simply the best. You're simply the best. This has been Badass Women's Hour's Best Bits. If you liked it, please do rate, review and subscribe us. We love that. 5 stars. Or come chat to us on social media. You can find us at Badass Women's Hour HR, at Badass Women's Hour, or come talk to us individually. I'm at Harriet Minter.
At Emma Sexton.
And
at Nat D. Campbell.
And we'll be here again next week, same time, same place.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.